The greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing the world he didn't exist.
I saw a pale horse,
a beast.
We're told in the book of Revelation.
This is not a human child.
Isn't an angel?
Satan! Armageddon is almost upon us.
Order the use of nuclear weapons.
The world is a fine place and worth fighting for.
From one end of the world to the other, I will oppose you.
They're here.
Welcome to the end of the world.
Wrestling not against flesh and blood, but against powers and principalities. This is PID Radio.
From the scorching Missouri Ozarks, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Welcome to our bunker, everybody. This is PID Radio. Today is August the 9th.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the day that the second mating pair of Dobson flies, Eastern
yes.
Dobson flies, showed up at our window.
Yeah.
Just knocking on the window.
Do a Google search for the Eastern Dobson fly and what they look like. They look like something from a science fiction, 1950s science fiction horror.
Dobson fly, all one word.
Product of some horrific nuclear accident that went awry. Which I guess is redundant, but that seems to be what Dobson flies are the product of. Yes.
Well, if you want to see the picture of the Dobson flies, and Dobson flies all one word, on our window this morning, Derek posted that. I posted it to Facebook.
Yeah.
They're creepy looking. They're about 3 inches, 3.5 inches long. They look like really weird, scary things.
Yeah, the male Dobson flies got these mandibles that look like, lethal weapons. But because they're so long, he actually can't get any leverage behind him. So it's like, they're just there to show off.
But female, she can bite.
Yeah, they can draw blood, female Dobson flies. Yeah. Now they
she was drawing a little blood picture out there. Mm-hmm. Had little paints.
they typically don't go after humans. But, for a kid from Chicago like me, I'll say again, wildlife for me growing up was robins, squirrels, and rats in the subway.
And in fact, you thought cardinals were made up.
Yeah. I mean, nobody sees cardinals. It's a state bird of Illinois. Get real. I never see anything but robins. If you go downtown, you can see pigeons and seagulls off the lake, but that's about it. But no, actually, now that we're out here, we see all kinds of things that I never saw before growing up. And I mentioned earlier, last night or night before last, I went outside to let Sam out, didn't have my glasses on. And
By earlier, you mean on Gilbert House.
Right. This morning.
Yes.
Yeah. I let Sam out a couple of nights ago, didn't have my glasses on, and I'm not, the proverbial blind as a bat, but I do need them to drive. But I was still able to see the Milky Way in the sky plainly. And, that's another thing that I thought was just sort of mythological when I was a kid growing up in Chicago. But in Chicago and other cities, you get so much light pollution, you cannot really see the sky as God intended for us to see it. So,
well, that's the cool thing. I mean, you read about all these observations that were made by normal human beings back in the day, and all they were doing was looking up into the sky. I know, even as a kid, and I grew up in the country, but there was just enough light pollution, even in a small town, to make it a little harder, but out here there's nothing.
Right.
Just us.
And it is an awe-inspiring sight, even without my glasses on. Now, with my glasses on, it was even better. So that was neat. We've already told you in the past about the skunk that took up temporary residence under our driveway. That's old news.
We've got a tree frog that hangs out on his artificial tree, or hers.
Yeah.
We think it may be a female
because
we've not
umbrella.
Heard any croaking out of her yet. So we call her Ethel instead of Fred.
Yeah. The patio umbrella, we unroll it, open it in the morning. Just have to look up there carefully to make sure a frog's not going to drop in your head. But she's a cute little thing. She's about the size of the last joint of my thumb.
Uh-huh. Yeah, she's really small.
So
cute.
Little toad that was hopping around last night when I let Sam out. So
little gray tree frog.
Yeah. But like I said, little brown toad that was out front as I let Sam out last night. Hopping around on the ground. So, yes, plenty of armadillos. But we
being
have yet to
lobbed
see,
at us by Texas.
Exactly, because we haven't seen any live ones yet. So we think Texas just lobbing them up along the I-44 corridor because they don't really live up here. They just the dead ones just kind of pop
up. It's the way to get rid of them.
Exactly.
They're probably, piling up down there.
Yeah.
Well, much to talk about because you and I have not done a PID radio for many weeks, and we apologize for that. We'd love to get back into a weekly pattern, but honestly, we don't have the time.
It's been very busy here, but it's been a good kind of busy.
Yeah.
A lot of things happening at Skywatch TV, which you know we are now affiliated with, partnered with, I guess would be the best way to put it.
We had a blast last week. Mm-hmm. Had many wonderful guests, Bob Ulrich, Gary Stearman, got to hang out with Steve Quayle the week before that.
And Timothy Alberino.
Timothy Alberino. Mm-hmm. Also, Josh Tolley came down last week.
Mm-hmm.
It's a crazy world out here in small town USA.
It's all go.
And you're constantly busy. You do updates, daily updates. If you've not been watching Skywatch TV Daily Updates with Derek, you really need to because he covers all the stuff that you and I would normally cover. He and I would normally cover on PID radio, but you get it every day.
Yeah.
In a nice 10-minute package.
Try to keep it to a 10-minute package. Add some graphics so it's... there's also an audio-only version, so if you can't watch the 10-minute YouTube video or if you don't have Roku, because they're all posted to Roku as well, you can subscribe to the podcast and just listen to the daily podcast, which goes anywhere from like 8 to 13 minutes, depending on how much stuff there's.
13,
Occasionally, yeah, not deliberately.
You know, speaking of that, I saw an interesting article yesterday, and truly on the internet, you can find just about any opinion on some of the opinions out there.
Yes.
Some of the opinions out there are a little stretched, I think. But it was interesting. This was about a date that occurred yesterday, 8/8/15.
Mm-hmm.
8 is, for some people, they believe it's the number of salvation. It is an occultic number because of the 8 Wiccan or witches Sabbaths that are on there's the Grand Cross and the Lesser Cross. It's got another name, but I can't think what it is. In other words, it's the main up and down, vertical, horizontal, and then the cross pieces.
Mm-hmm.
So you get an octagon that is formed by those. So 8 is seen by many in the occult as a significant number. In fact, we've seen a few funerals over the years since you and I've been doing this, and we'll often see the body on a dais that is sitting upon, that is 8-cornered. In fact,
Gerald Ford?
Gerald Ford.
Yeah. That was really unusual.
Yeah. So anyway, 8/8/8 is what I read the other day, and I thought, it's 15, it's not 22. In 2008, it's 2015. And the claim was, no, 2 plus 1 plus 1 plus 5.
Mm-hmm. 2 plus 1 plus 5, yeah.
2 plus 0 plus 1, 5.
Right, is 8.
Yeah, so it's
right.
8. So numerically, mind you, this was an astrology website that I sort of, I saw the story, I think, at Above Top Secret or something and went over there and I thought, this is astrology. Got halfway down, but it was the idea that, and let me tell you why I look at things like that. I don't believe in things like that. But I think that there are many who do.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people who perhaps are influenced by the occult and by spiritual entities that are at war with God, with Jehovah, with Jesus Christ, with Yeshua. And these entities want to make us believe things or want to make their followers believe certain things. So yesterday was supposed to have had some sort of power to it. And I think that there's something else about August 8th.
Well, of course, 8/8/08 was when the Chinese opened up their
Beijing
Olympics.
Yes, and
really
that had some sort of good luck number, too, in China.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, what is it that's on August 8th? It isn't. I was looking to see if it was the Assumption of Mary. No, that's August 15th. August 8th, the Nativity. Of our Blessed Mother.
Oh, okay.
I knew there was something with Mary on 8/8. So there you go.
While we're talking about numbers, let me bring up one that I caught this week that I thought was really interesting. I haven't had a chance to include it yet on Skywatch TV.
By the way, I'm not Catholic.
I hope to do it this week. No.
Quoting from a Catholic website.
Yeah, and just let's head that off there.
Yeah.
Anyone who's listened to the show for a long time knows that we're
No, I was raised a Southern Baptist, and then we went Independent Baptist, and then later on I grew independent from that, and now I'm a Christian with a capital C.
Yeah.
That's it.
And anyone who's listened to the show a long time knows we're Catholic bashers anyway. Not really.
And he's saying that tongue in cheek,
yes.
But the truth, let me just very, very quickly just clarify. we believe that no matter what denomination you are affiliated with, let me put more syllables into that word, that you're associated with. How about that? That we believe every church building probably has at least one or two people in it that are genuinely saved. Mm-hmm. There are lots of buildings that have lots of people in it that are saved, and some that have very few people in it that mm-hmm. are saved. And there are some people who are saved that aren't in a building at all that is called a church by this right. world. They're at home. In other words, it's not the denomination that saves you or doesn't save you. It is your relationship with Jesus Christ.
Absolutely correct.
And just yes. because you are called by a certain name doesn't mean you can't accept Christ as your Savior. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you won't. Doesn't mean you will. It's all up to you.
Absolutely.
That's that free will thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and we should also point out that over the last 10 years, we have been probably as critical of, if not more critical of, Protestant denominations than we have Roman Catholicism.
We're but equal opportunity, like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
bashers.
Equal opportunity annoyers. every time it seems like every time we bring up the Pope or the Vatican.
We're either called Catholic lovers or Catholic bashers.
Or, that's it, yes. We're Jesuit coadjutors.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, yeah.
Well.
So, anyway, this numerical thing I thought was really interesting because it was released this past week. A story that Buzz Aldrin put
out. Oh, yes, numerically. Oh, yes.
Yeah, this story was published on the 2nd. He's revealed some of the memorabilia that he collected from Apollo 11, which, of course, was the first man on the moon, we're told.
We'll put that in quotes.
Yeah, and one of the items that came out was a travel voucher that he submitted for reimbursement to NASA, travel expenses, for the period between 7-7-69 and 7-27-69. And 7-7-69, I think, is kind of interesting because, of course, 1969, you get that 969 is sort of an inverted 666. And 7-7, which, of course, is significant numerically as well.
Yeah.
The launch date of Apollo 11 was on the 16th, which, of course, would be 7 and then another 7 if you had the 1 and 6. But anyway, the dollar amount that he requested was $33.31 for the travel from Houston to Cape Kennedy and then back to Houston again. Now, the person who wrote the article for the Daily Mail didn't see anything weird about the numbers 33 and 31. Now, 31 is just an inverted 13,
yes,
which is an important occultic number. Of course, 33 is a number that's important to Scottish Rite Freemasons, mm-hmm. which Mr. Aldrin is. He is a Scottish Rite Freemason.
He is indeed. And it also represents one third.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is the number, the percentage of the fallen angels mm-hmm. that rebelled against God Most High. Mm-hmm. You know, we're told that in the book of Revelation. Mr. Aldrin went to the moon. They did report in The Guardian on the 2nd, reporting on the same release of memorabilia about Apollo 11 that, Buzz Aldrin actually performed communion on the moon. He had taken the elements, the bread and the wine, and had communion, ate and drank the elements on the moon. But how NASA chose not to broadcast that so as not to offend anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Neil Armstrong was there. Now, apparently, Mr. Armstrong is a deist and doesn't believe in Jesus as such. So he just kind of stood by and watched. But they did report that. And part of the reason NASA, I guess, chose not to broadcast this was they had just recently been sued by the atheist Madeleine Murray O'Hare. So they didn't want to cause any more trouble for themselves by, as an agency of the government,
mm-hmm.
Appearing to favor the one religion over another. So, but the significance of the...
That fly loves you.
Yeah, it does. I've got that fly zapper in here.
Oh, it's right over there. I'll go get it.
Yeah. My mother got us one of those fly zappers you can find. They've got them on the end cap displays at some of the Walmart stores. Looks like a small, like, badminton racket or something with a couple of AA batteries in it. Yeah. Costs about $10, and it's amazing how much voltage you can get out of a pair of AA batteries. Because when you hit a fly with one of these things, it sparks and pops, and the fly disappears.
Now, just in case you're wondering, if you use this on a wasp... it will only stun it.
Yes, yes. It's only set to stun for wasps, which is good for slowing it down so you can then squish it. But it's really effective on houseflies and lots of fun, too.
Here, give it to me.
Yeah. So if you catch it.
I'll see if I can get it. If you hear a loud pop, it's...
That's the fly being zapped. Anyway, what the Guardian and the Daily Mail did not report in reporting about his expense claim of $33.31 was that Aldrin, while he was on the moon, under special deputation from the Clear Lake Lodge in Texas, where Aldrin was a member, he established Tranquility Lodge number 2000 for the Freemasons on the moon.
So how often do they meet there?
Well, I would say the odds are never. There are a number of theories that conspiracy theories that we just won't. That's a theory too far. We won't go there. But we do have questions about whether man actually made it out of low Earth orbit. I mean, according to the official story, we have not made it out of low Earth orbit since the last flight of the space shuttle, which has been grounded.
Right.
And since we quit,
as far as manned vehicles.
Yeah. Or actually, no. Last time out of low Earth orbit was 1971 with Apollo 17.
Well, don't we send probes all the time?
We send probes, but those aren't manned.
That's what I said.
That's the point. We've not sent a man out of low Earth orbit.
Yeah, that's why I said manned. Right.
So anyway, we're willing to go there.
I recently read that NASA is saying that the thing to do is send robots to other planets.
Yeah, because they don't have to worry about those deadly cosmic rays.
Yeah.
And again, every time this comes up, it's like Van Allen belt. Because there was a story that was out just a couple of weeks ago about a new research into...
CERN is researching a force field to protect astronauts from the radiation in the Van Allen belt.
Mm-hmm. And we're like... Wait, how did
we get through there before?
Didn't we have this licked?
In that little tin can with it.
1969. Didn't we have this licked? I mean, we saw Tom Hanks go to the moon. Come on. Or almost.
You wouldn't lie.
Yeah. So if we believe the stories and if we believe the Freemasons, there is a Masonic lodge on the moon. And for his travel to the launch site and back, Buzz Aldrin claimed $33.
And he won this lovely badminton electronic racket.
For zapping stuff, yeah. That's
cool. I have to go to a story that I showed to you earlier, and it's really a strange little story. One never knows what South America is going to come up with. Brazil is now saying in Ceilândia, which is close to the capital, that there's a werewolf roaming around. And it's based on fears that are being put forth by locals, and I don't know who started it, but a young woman on some social media account, I don't know if it's a version of Twitter or what down there, or if it was actually Twitter or Facebook, because I don't see it in this article. Mm-hmm. And the original article is in Spanish, and which I studied way too long ago to really be able to read. It's very likely to be a Photoshopped image or misunderstood. But it appears to be a man with wolf-like legs.
You know what it struck me as? It almost looked like somebody who has had a tragic accident and has to wear those.
In fact, Oscar Pistorius kind of.
Yes, blades. Oscar Pistorius type of blades.
In fact, someone made that comment saying that if it isn't photoshopped, it does look like someone who has blades. For legs, that's possible because that's how they're shaped.
Mm-hmm.
The entity, the thing in the picture, appears to be wearing tails, mm-hmm. as in a tail coat. So I don't know.
Because werewolves are always impeccably dressed.
Oh, yeah. It may be.
Vampires got the rep, but really werewolves are the ones.
No top hat, though. So, no prize there. But it sort of reminded me of the Judas breed. From that movie with Mimic.
Mira Sorvino and Charles Dutton.
Yeah, yeah. Great movie.
Mm-hmm.
Great movie. So anyway, if you get a chance to take a look, do a search for Brazil and werewolf, and you'll find all sorts of things.
Yeah, interesting.
So I don't know.
Maybe he was on his way to, talent night at the theater. Putting on the Ritz!
Or Warren Zevon.
Yeah.
Werewolves in Brazil.
Werewolves of Rio. Yeah. Well, yeah, there's a lot of stuff going on like that. You know, especially now that I'm doing the daily updates and that it's my responsibility to look every day as opposed to, you know, yeah. 6 months ago when it was still my responsibility to go out and call on customers of steel every day and to follow what was happening.
And they don't appreciate those werewolf stories.
No. No, most customers didn't. It really wasn't relevant to the business. I've noticed how many stories dealing with either cryptids or the or UFOs or the life in space meme are run in the major media. You know, it's really astounding because, you know, most people who don't pay close attention think, well, these stories never make the mainstream media. There are certain media outlets that maybe don't touch them regularly, like CNN that, you know, to
work series. But even CNN.
But CNN will pick them up from time to time. But there are certain outlets like the Daily Mail or
Huffington Post
that will publish these on a regular basis. And it keeps the meme going that, you know, life was created out there, and so it was seeded here.
Mm-hmm.
The disclosure meme is it's a steady drumbeat in the background of the daily news reporting. In fact, there was one that even had me laughing the other day. There was a really neat archaeological discovery in the Mediterranean recently that they're calling the underwater Stonehenge. And they're speculating that it might be related to the legend of Atlantis. It's a stone monument that's been discovered on the floor of the Mediterranean Sea. Archaeologists think it might be as old as 10,000 years old, which, you know, if you, depending on your point of view, that's right at the very edge of recorded civilization or the very beginning of human civilization, human existence on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
Scientists from the University of Tel Aviv discovered this monolith on 130 feet of water off the coast of Sicily. Now, the story that, and I forget where I saw this, it was for The Inquisitor, which is a curated news site, theinquisitor.com, ran the story. I mean, it's a legitimate story. They're not making this up, but they found, they were compelled in reporting on this story, this discovery of this stone monument on the floor of the Mediterranean Sea that, by the way, astronomers say that there's a similar structure on Comet 67P. Like, really? Really? You're going to go from a legitimate archaeology story to this, you know, we found space henge up there on Comet 67P, which could be evidence of life on the comet that then could, they probably smashed into Earth at some point in the past, and that's why Earth, you know. Oh.
There are much more interesting things about 67P, but I don't really think that there's a Stonehenge.
No. There was a story out a couple of weeks ago about 67P, and this was from a guy whose views, some of his colleagues said, they were polite, and they said his views fall outside the mainstream of accepted science, who was saying that there could be organic molecules on Comet 67P, which could prove that comets are the source of life on Earth. Yeah, right.
Yeah, except that that's one of the things they're looking for up there.
But it's not. That's the point. The guys who debunked it said, you know, we had a discussion 15 years ago about whether or not to put sensors up here to look for organic molecules, and the consensus was there's no need. It's ridiculous.
I thought that's one of the things that Philae was looking for.
No, it's not. But the guy who was claiming that there might be molecules there was one of the guys who wanted sensors on 67P.
Well, that was just it. I was not under the impression that they'd found any, but let me just do a little.
Yeah, well, you go ahead and double check and make sure that I'm correct about that. But the guy who was arguing that there might be molecules up there said, oh, and by the way, my colleague and I were arguing in the planning sessions that we needed to have these sensors to detect organic compounds, and they decided against it. And then again, others at this meeting of some astronomers' annual convention said, well, you know, his beliefs are kind of outside the mainstream anyway. But there are always stories like that. That's why the search is so intense on Mars for
this is from
compounds.
Science Daily. And it says Philae's first results from the Chury prove surprising organic molecules on comets. Organic molecules never previously observed in comets, a relatively varied structure on the surface, but a fairly homogeneous interior, organic compounds forming agglomerates rather than being dispersed on the ice. These are just some of the first results provided by Philae on the surface of Comet Curie, which is 67P.
Yeah, you're right. It does say that. Detected organic compounds.
I thought I had seen that article.
I'm going to have to do some more digging here because one of the things that I found surprising was that they didn't have, and maybe it's, maybe I'm thinking of a different mission.
Well, I don't know.
But there was somebody who had said that we had wanted to include this technology on the lander, and it wasn't. And but then it, when others were in, you know, interviewed, they said, "Look, there's no evidence, no reason to believe that there's anything alive or anything organic on the, the surface of the comet."
According to this, it was published in the journal Science on July 31st.
Yeah, I must be thinking of a different mission.
It was written by a French guy, so it's got to be real.
But, you know, regardless, the point stands that there are stories like this all the time about the search for organic material on comets or asteroids that might slam into the Earth.
Oh, yeah.
Because the working theory now is that rather than a creator, of course, that there was some or, you know, because they've not been able to come up with any kind of plausible scenario under which dead matter willed itself to life. And
right.
That's what their theory depends on. They've got to find some mechanism.
Some sort of precipitating event that kicked everything into motion. In fact, that's the very essence of the movie Prometheus.
Yeah. Yeah. We had some creators who came down here and sacrificed himself in order to. Yeah. But of course, that begs the question, where did they come from?
Well, from other engineers, of course.
Turtles all the way down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, and of course we got the pyramid on Ceres, which is the dwarf planet in the asteroid belt there. They still haven't figured out what those bright spots are in that that crater. They got these spots that they thought, well, maybe it's ice, maybe it's, you know, salt. I mean, for all we know,
Eastern Dobson flies.
Yeah, spray paint, you know, for all we know. Who knows? It's about a 4 mile tall mountain. On Ceres.
That's really tall.
It is, considering that Ceres is like...
It's really small.
Yeah, it's like the diameter of Ceres is like 584 miles.
Yeah.
It's like 40% the size of Pluto, so it's... and that's another story that just came out recently, too. Pluto's actually a Death Star-like artificial satellite inhabited by aliens. Yeah. It's bizarre. Now,
is
like
Peter
I said... Is
Peter Cushing aboard?
He probably is. Yes, yes. So, it's really bizarre, but now that I'm looking for this on a daily basis, it's like every other day.
Yeah.
There's a website or two. There are these guys who have YouTube channels who are searching through every photo, every pixel of the data that's being sent back from the Curiosity rover on Mars. That's why I found the Mars crab, and now the latest one is a veiled woman on Mars.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, some of these things look actually pretty legit, you know.
I like the crab, though. Mr. Krabs.
Yeah. but we think really what's happening is the rover's probably just wandering around the desert in Arizona.
Yeah, that's
and
the only thing that makes
NASA,
sense to me.
Yeah, getting some jollies. Oh, they'll really like this one.
Throw a crab up there against the rocks. Come on. So. Well, I've got a story coming out of the Black Hat Conference, which was going on in, I think, Las Vegas last week. One of the many presentations there had to do with how you can kill someone, I'll put that in air quotes, quote-unquote kill, someone online. Because they're in the interest of making things more available, I'll just put it that way, because of Obamacare, the so-called Affordable Health Care Act. don't get us started on that. That everything has to go online. That was part of that bill, part of that massive bill, is that all health records had to be searchable and available online. And in order to comply with that, funeral directors and doctors have to post death records and birth records online. So a lot of doctors and funeral homes have not yet signed up. So you just find a doctor who hasn't signed up with these services yet, go in and fake your own, pose as Dr. Jones, because you can get Dr. Jones's license number online and pretend to be him or her. And you can, quote unquote, kill anyone you want by saying, oh, I'm sorry that Mr. Smith died on, you know, April 1st of 2015. And then you can proceed to cash in on insurance or whatever you want to do. Or you can just do it just to make somebody miserable because you like doing it because you're a black hat hacker.
Yeah.
But you can also create someone by making a false child.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Sam T. Dachshund Gilbert was born on April 1st of 2015. And as that Sam T. Dachshund Gilbert fake person grows up, we can apply for a Social Security card,
yes,
and credit cards.
Derive tax benefits.
Yeah, this hacker even said, you know, make burn identities for your children so that when they get older, they've got several to fall back on.
Mm-hmm. It's the thing that really surprised me, and you pointed this out, is that tech news outlets are reporting on this as though this is a really exciting trade convention that everybody should go to because, boy, you're really learning some great stuff. It's like, wait a minute, these guys are breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are openly bragging about how to break the law.
Exactly.
And, you know, that really disturbed me when Leo Laporte years ago, and I talked about this, and I know the guy claimed to be a white hat hacker, and he was showing how to protect yourself against these kind of hackers, but he still kept using euphemisms that, in my mind, were his attempt to rationalize what he was doing as good, as not a bad thing. And I can't remember the fellow's name, so I'm not going to get it wrong, but it was a hacker that Leo Laporte used to bring on from every now and again, and he would talk about social engineering. So, no, I'm sorry, that's not social engineering. That is fraud, that is conning, that is lying, deliberately deceiving people in order to extract information from them they would not normally give up to you willingly. I found it disturbing that Leo was bringing this guy on and that they weren't really pointing out, hey,
right,
look, what I'm doing here is illegal and this is wrong and I realize this is wrong, but this is how somebody will use it. No, the guy didn't seem to show any remorse. And like I said, the use of the euphemism social engineering to me is
that just smacks of 1984.
Well,
to me.
It's denial of responsibility or accountability.
Well, there's a great book that I highly recommend that every one of you get a copy of, and you can get it in Kindle format. It's called Future Crimes. Everything is connected. Everyone is vulnerable and what we can do about it by Mark Goodman. I have learned a tremendous amount from
that.
This book. And in many ways, if you haven't read this, then you're way behind on what the internet can do to you and your children. And there's a whole section on AI. There's an entire section on the deep web and deep net, dark net. These are places where unspeakable things take place. Mm. People are sold. Children are sold. All sorts of other things are sold. There are pictures available there. People can actually hire someone to kill you there. I mean, just about any dark thing, any evil that mankind can conceive of, it's available in these deep websites. And it's not searchable by Google, which is why it's called the deep web. And even the deep web itself is just a tiny scratching of the surface of what's underneath that. You can go down and down, and it's like going down into the pits of hell, except it's available on your child's laptop.
Mm-hmm.
And if your child is falling prey to this idea of black hat or even white hat hacking, he or she may wander into some of these websites. You have to know the specific place to go. Silk Road, in fact, that was in the news last year, was part of the deep web, and it was a place where you could go to buy drugs and things like that. And most of the things are sold for digital currency.
Mm-hmm.
And this takes us to another story that came up over the last week or two, and that is that digital currency is becoming mainstream.
Yeah.
In fact, Bitcoin
mm-hmm.
is now accepted by quite a number of vendors.
Yeah, and there are a number of fellows on the web who talk about economics that are very much in favor of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
I haven't done a whole lot of research on this because
everything is digital now anyway, so
yeah.
Why does it make any difference?
Yeah,
the fact is, money you and I have, what little there is, in our bank account, they're not dollars.
No,
they're not paper dollars.
No, it's bits and bytes on a hard drive somewhere. And
what lose?
In fact, I had a conversation with Steve Quayle about that, who made some just very basic common sense suggestions for not getting caught short. I mean, I have a bad habit of walking around often with no money at all in my wallet for days, weeks at a time sometimes, because I've got that little card.
Yeah.
And, you know, I hate to admit this because this is really laziness on my part, but there may come a time where, you know, I get into trouble, and suddenly that card's not accepted for one reason or another. Either the grid is down, or somebody decided that, okay, this guy's a troublemaker. Let's just burn his identity so that he doesn't exist anymore.
Or it could be something as simple as, I'm sorry, our computer is down today.
Well, yes, exactly.
And you really need that, you know, whatever it is you're buying.
Right. You need to pay somebody to tow your car or whatever. And so, again, just not smart thinking on my part. So
but we're all, it's not just you, honey.
No,
we're all getting away from that cash.
We're all conditioned to believe that. And that's maybe, you know, I need to do a little more research on the Bitcoin to find out why this is any better. If this is just a digital form of currency.
It's just that's all it is. The thing about Bitcoin is that you can actually, and this is why it's being used in the deep web, you can trade it for real money. In other words, there are women and men who are working from home who've answered, and students who've answered an ad. This is all in this book, Future Crimes. And Mark Goodman has worked for Interpol and with various lettered agencies. He's an expert in computer theft. He knows his stuff. So this book is coming from an insider. And he often relates it to crimes that he's investigated himself. But these digital currencies can be laundered for real money, which they can be delivered to a location or a bank account. In other words, if I want to sell drugs and I make, let's say, $20,000 in bitcoins this month, then I have maybe 20 different people working from their homes who each takes $1,000 of that $20,000, takes it, and I give them cash for it. They put that cash into their bank account or they receive cash. But anyway, this is a money laundering thing. And sadly, it's the people who are working from their homes who may not realize they're working for a gangster. And they're the ones getting arrested.
Hmm. From a the standpoint of dealing in a currency that's actually backed by something, which our fiat currency here in the United States is not, and most currencies around the world are not, I just don't see where, again, and I admit, I don't understand Bitcoin well enough to you know, that's my big question about it. What's behind Bitcoin?
It's some guy who made it up, and you have to perform online services in order to accrue Bitcoins.
Right, which can be wiped out digitally just as easily as my bank account can.
Yeah, and in fact, like $1 billion of them were wiped out, and he was accused of stealing it.
Yeah. Well, that make a note of that. I need to do an interview on Bitcoin, understand that better, and find out what that is. Because you're right, it is becoming more mainstream, and understanding it will be important going into the future.
And if not Bitcoin, it will be something else. Eventually,
something like
we're going to move totally off cash entirely.
In fact, didn't I read that one of the Scandinavian countries has already done that?
Yeah.
Was it Norway?
Finland, maybe? Yeah, one of them.
So anyway, we're moving in that direction. And again, here in the U.S., we're probably most of the way that no, I'll have to go back and read it. What I was remembering about Norway was connected to Bitcoin. Norway saying Bitcoin's not a real currency. So anyway, but yeah, it is going to be a way for them to wipe out our savings, our net worth in a very rapid, in very quick fashion.
Well, and speaking of the economy, and we can get away from digital currency because you just recently discussed the economy and the bubble that's being created, several bubbles, in fact. The whole world economy right now is perilously poised upon, stuff that doesn't exist. We'll just put it that way.
Yeah, it's been a bubble for a while. The median family income in the United States has been declining over the last 40 years. We just haven't really noticed it because we've been substituting debt for income. We've been financing bigger homes, newer cars, more tech toys and stuff just by borrowing the money, putting it on a credit card. And the federal government has been encouraging that through creation of these different bubbles. We had the tech bubble of the 90s, which was followed by the real estate bubble of the 2000s. Right now, the bubble is in student loans, which is really tragic because students are coming out of college now with loans that they're getting on easy terms, low interest rates, and that's supposed to be a good thing because the rates of interest that they're paying are low and they've got many, many years to pay them back. But the downside of the student loan phenomenon is that those loans never go away. I mean, you run into a bad situation where you get ill and lose your job and you have to reorganize your finances. You can file for bankruptcy, but that student loan just sits out there, gathers, you know, accrues more interest, and then you start paying on it again as soon as you're able to start making payments.
Yeah, we're still paying
on mine. Yeah, it is a sad fact that a lot of students are coming out of college now with a $25,000 or $35,000 debt load.
Oh, that's low.
Yeah, and
sometimes it's six figures and up.
Well, I was going to say that's on average. That's if they just come out with an average, you know, engineering degree, econ degree, whatever. If they go back to graduate school to get a master's or a PhD, then, you know, you're talking a six-figure debt. And you can never discharge that. That stays with you until you die. That's the next bubble.
And the interest rate isn't always that low. You know, you may think, well, low, it's probably 2 or 3%. Sometimes it's 7 to 10.
Yeah. But then speculators in the financial realm have taken those debts. They've done this with mortgages. They've done it with life insurance policies. They probably do it with they probably are doing it with student loans. And I just haven't researched it. Packaging them up and selling them off to investors. And student loans be a great investment because, once you've got a student loan, you're on the hook for it until you pay it off or die. And, that, you know, is a pretty good risk for an investor. But the thing is the derivatives market and some of these weird credit default swaps and other derivatives that I just barely comprehend, if at all, the total value of them is what do we figure out? Something like four times the combined value of the entire world's
trillions
and many trillions of dollars. It's like four times greater than the combined GDP of every country on Earth. So if that house of cards starts to fall, there's nothing that's going to stop it before it collapses totally. And that was one of the interesting aspects of the discussion with Josh Tolley this week. He hosts a daily 2-hour radio show on Genesis Communications, 9 to 11 Central Time.
1.2 quadrillion.
1.2
this
quadrillion.
This was in 2010.
Okay. So it's in the quadrillions. And Josh has got a book out called Evangelpreneur, which is obviously a word made up of evangelism and entrepreneurship. His argument is that biblically, the entrepreneurial mindset is okay with God. It's encouraged by God. In fact, as Christians, we would do better than to tie ourselves to an employer for our entire work life, because your employer then determines how much money you're going to make, when you're going to work, which then by extension dictates how much money you're going to have when you retire, how much money you can give to your church or to other ministries that you want to support, how much time you get to spend with your family. You know, things like that, that you are basically giving up. You're basically selling yourself into indentured servitude. It may not seem like that because we've been conditioned over generations to believe that that's what you do. You go to school, you go to college, get a degree, get a good job, work for this guy for 40 years, and then retire with a pension. Or at least that's the way it was in our dad's generation. Our generation, maybe you move around from company to company looking for better opportunity, but the idea is still the same. You join the workforce, you work hard, advance your career, put a little money away, and you know, when you retire, then depend on Social Security to retire. But things have changed. It's not that way anymore. And Josh's argument is you take that a step further and look at what we as Christians know prophetically is coming, a future one-world government, an increasing crackdown on Christians. And if worst comes to worst, and we Christians are actually here when Antichrist appears on the world stage and imposes the mark on all those who would be part of his system. You know, bow the knee to me, you'll get the mark, and then you can continue to buy and sell. Josh made the point that, you know, in prison where guys are under, theoretically anyway, under very close supervision, still manage somehow to get their hands on cigarettes or drugs or pornography, you know, things that they're not supposed to have, because you've got some entrepreneurs in there who are figuring out how to get things done. Not that we need to.
We're not being encouraged to do that.
No, to break the law, but there will be ways that we're going to have to be creative to
help each other out.
Exactly right. And it may mean, well, certainly in order to provide for our families outside of the beast system, we are going to need to rediscover that entrepreneurial mindset.
Yeah. And, you know, when I was a kid, and in fact, when my parents were kids, even more so, we were relatively self-sufficient. Mm-hmm. We always had a vegetable garden. We always had a milk cow. You know, there were chickens. There were a lot of things that we did to feed ourselves. And I think that partly that was because my parents had been raised that way, but also partly because we didn't have a lot of money. And that was the cheapest way to feed ourselves was to use seeds. And, hey, that cow, you pay for her once, and you got 3 or 4, 5 years of milking. You know, pretty good.
You know, in previous generations, when you're a farmer, you basically are an entrepreneur.
Yes, you are.
And since we were primarily a rural agrarian society until pretty much the turn of the 20th century, it's only been the last few generations where that idea that you basically do what you need to do, be creative, work hard, and reap the benefits of what you sow.
Mm-hmm.
You're also taking on a lot of risk, of course, but you aren't limited by somebody else saying, this is how much I'm going to pay you and not one penny more.
Well, exactly. And this isn't just you guys out there, because the Proverbs 31 woman clearly is doing something at home that she takes to market and sells. She has a little cottage industry going.
Yeah. There were some folks that I knew in southern Illinois that I traveled down, the Mennonite fellows that had that business making farm equipment for dairy operations mostly. And the gentleman's wife, the owner, you know, had all of his sons working for him. Very proud guy. And his sons were very respectful, very hardworking young men. Really a delight to get to know those guys. His wife and their daughters had their own business going, where they would bake all of these wonderful, you know, pies and breads and things and take them over to Cape Girardeau to a farmer's market on a regular basis. And they were making a decent income just from what they were baking and selling over there in Cape. So
That always broke my heart when you talk about the extra pies that they bring home and they just give them to the cows.
Yeah, pies. we can't don't have room to store them all. Well, we'll just throw them out for the cows.
And they just love
make
cow
the
milk pies.
Taste good. Yeah. Well, there's a story that came out last week that I think is worth touching on, because I thought this was interesting in a couple of ways. It was a story that came out of the Florida Panhandle. A mother and her two sons, mother was 77 years old, the sons were 49 and 47, were killed the last week of July, Tuesday, July 28th, they were struck multiple times with a claw hammer, and then their throats were slit. One of the men was also shot in his right ear. But the county sheriff in Escambia County, Florida, told the press that their initial investigation indicated it was a ritualistic killing, perhaps tied to the blue moon.
But didn't it occur before the blue moon?
Well, that's the question. The blue moon was on the 31st, which was
Friday.
Yeah, and the murders were discovered on the 28th, the times of death on the 28th, which was a Tuesday evening. So the question is how they could be tied to the blue moon when they occurred several days before the blue moon. Secondly, the fact that the police openly put this out to the press, because we, you know, seen some stories where things were clearly ritualistic. The Hosanna Church case in Chapultepec Parish, Louisiana, which was the inspiration for
True Detective, the first season. Yeah.
And they mentioned it early on, and then suddenly the police clammed up, and then there was no mention of it, and they didn't bring any of the occult aspects of the case into the trial. They just prosecuted the defendants on the child abuse charges, I think. That was the bigger story to me, was that this sheriff came forward and said, no, we think this is ritualistic and tied to the blue moon. Of course, pagans and Wiccans in Florida and around the country are outraged that the sheriff would imply that they would engage in this type of behavior connected to this event. The blue moon only occurs about, once every 3 years? It's the second full moon in the span of a month.
Aren't there one or two a year? I'll have to look.
No, I think it's more rare than that. I think it's only one every 3 years or so.
Well, it's a once in a blue moon you see one.
Exactly. Occurs about every 2.5 years.
Oh,
so
well,
it is relatively rare. But I'm not aware that this is something that, I'm not an expert on the occult by any means, but I had never heard of this sort of violent ritualistic killing connected to a blue moon.
No, neither have I. And it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Right. Like I said, I'm not an expert.
Well,
but,
total left turn. And this is another story that you will learn more about if you read the book Future Crimes. That is how your washing machine can steal computer files from you. As we get into the Internet of Things.
Yeah. I was going to say, in my case, it's because I keep leaving the thumb drives in my pocket.
It's hastily making copies and then putting and them then, back in
yes.
their pockets.
Yep.
Seriously, there are more and more appliances in the Internet of Things that are connected. They're Wi-Fi connected, Bluetooth connected, all sorts of other ways of wirelessly connecting with the interwebs.
Mm-hmm.
And why? Because your toaster needs to know when it needs a part so it can, you know, send a little note to, you know, its head company and mm-hmm. say, I need a new, you know, coil or whatever. Or your fridge says, you're out of eggs. I'll just send that information over to the store and mm-hmm. tell them you're out of eggs and then they can deliver some.
Except
little drone from Amazon yeah. can come along and bring the little.
Oh, except that we've checked your body mass index, Mr. Gilbert, and you're not eligible for.
Well, that day's coming yeah. too. Uh-huh. Everything, the Internet of Things is this idea that everything, and when I say everything, I mean everything, everything material in the world, that includes you and me,
mm-hmm.
will be connected.
Yeah, through, they're talking about ingestible RFID tags connected to medicines.
Well,
so that when the Proteus chip, when you ingest it,
mm-hmm.
It basically lets your doctor know when you are and are not taking your recommended dose of whatever. And
mm-hmm.
tie that to, oh my gosh, imagine being, you know, Mr. Gilbert, you've got these crazy conspiracy ideas. We think you need this drug here that will help to calm your nerves. And
well, let me tell you about another story I saw this uh-huh. week that will help you with that, Mr. Gilbert. It's one of the many research information stories that have come out about the Brain Initiative here in the United States that was announced, back in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
It has to do with turning on and turning off neurons.
Mm-hmm.
If you can change a neuron's receptor sites so that only a designer drug will fit it, in other words, designer receptor, designer drug, so A receptor will only fit A drug, B receptor will only fit the B drug, and so on, you can essentially control people. And this is being touted as, hey, this research showed that when we altered the neuron for hunger, let's just give that example, in mice and gave them drugs that turned it on or turned it off, we were able to control their intake of food. And they lost weight, gained muscle mass, whatever you want to say. In the past, in the last few years, because this has been around for about 10 years, designer drugs were only capable of either turning it on or turning it off. But now there's a receptor site and designer drugs that will do both. So we can switch them on and off at will depending on the drug. Same site, only have to alter that DNA once. And suddenly you've got control mechanisms. Now, feature a person who is dependent from birth on a designer drug to live. We've altered the DNA germline so that your children are always born with a requirement for XYZ drug. Otherwise, they will live. They will die.
That's like the concept that Michael Crichton proposed in Jurassic Park, where the dinosaurs were supposed to be genetically engineered to be lacking the amino acid lysine,
right,
which they had to be fed in order to keep them alive. And somehow
yes.
they managed to evolve out of that.
Yeah.
Hence Jurassic Park 2, 3, and 4.
Yeah.
Now there was another story that I had talked about on one of those daily updates recently about how and of course it's slipping away. I've gone through so many of these in the last few weeks, how these drugs, it's about the remote control release of these specific drugs. There's a new device that's been developed in a lab that's about the thickness of a human hair that can be implanted in a brain.
Oh yes, I saw that.
Yeah. And then remotely triggered to release perhaps this designer drug
mm-hmm.
so that people could be remotely controlled.
And this may be one of the attractions of the Mark of the Beast.
Yeah, yeah.
You not only can you not buy or sell, but you won't be able to get your daily drug allotment
mm-hmm.
if you're not chipped, and you'll die if you don't get it or something like that.
Yeah.
The science that's out there right now, thanks to CRISPR-Cas9, the ability to at will edit your DNA, not only for you today, but also for the children that you have. It's terrifying.
Yeah, the science is cool. We love science.
But, I do, too. I wouldn't have studied science if I didn't.
Sure. Science is morally neutral. The thing about the transhumanists that look at developments like this and think, oh, how can we use this to create or improve upon God's design for humanity? Of course, they don't think it's God's design. They think we're the product of accident. And their naivete, their naivete is almost charming in its childlike just unawareness of anything that might intrude on the little fantasy world that they've created. That's, mm-hmm. I actually had a Twitter exchange maybe 6 weeks back with somebody who was used a Twitter handle that made it very clear that they were looking forward to the singularity very, very soon. Mm-hmm. And they were very upset with Ray Kurzweil, Dr. Raymond Kurzweil, who is probably the most well-known advocate for the transhumanist movement, believes we're going to be immortal by the year 2045, that humanity will achieve immortality within the next 15 or 20 years, 30 years. And this person was really upset with Kurzweil because he'd made the comment that, there are things taking place, advances in science that we need to be careful of. There are some elements of the transhumanist movement that could backfire on us. Artificial intelligence could prove to be problematic if, the Terminator scenario, things like that. And this person was like, he's an idiot. He's an idiot. Science is always good. Like, what?
No.
Really? Science is morally neutral. It can do wonderful things for us, improve the quality of life for people, make our work more efficient, render dangerous things safe, but on the other side of the coin, science has also given us the nuclear weapon, which could, destroy life on planet Earth if we're not careful with it. There are other elements of science that have been used specifically for the purpose of making the slaughter of our fellow human beings more efficient. The Germans were very scientific and very efficient about how they transported people to, marched people into, and cleared them out of the gas chambers.
Well,
so science is a moral neutral.
The internet is a really good example. Science discovered the internet. CERN, in yep. fact. Tim Berners-Lee is the one who started the World Wide Web mm-hmm. out of CERN. The internet was actually created by
DARPA.
The Defense Department here in the United States. But the World Wide Web that allows the entire world to use this internet infrastructure came out of CERN. So even though I'm not crazy about a lot of the projects that come out of CERN, the internet allows you and me to do this podcast
sure.
and be heard around the world.
For a minimum of investment.
Yes,
yeah.
But it also allows dark individuals to commerce on the deep web, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, human trafficking, illegal yeah. narcotic sales, and so it goes both ways. It is a moral neutral. It reflects both the best and the worst of humanity.
Yeah.
And
I think that there are probably wonderful things coming out of the Brain Initiative. I don't think that there's anything wrong with studying science.
No,
I think that's
not at all.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely.
But because we are fallen human beings, there will always be someone who wants to use it for personal gain.
People often ask us, where do we draw the line on transhumanism? Yeah, look, my dad had an artificial knee. It saved him a lot of pain in his later years because of the arthritis that he had endured in that joint. But he wasn't depending on his artificial knee to live forever.
No.
He wasn't depending on technology to save his soul.
But the other thing is he replaced something that was already there. He
yes.
wasn't trying to put in a third eye or put in
right.
an implant to make himself cognitively smarter or try to upload his consciousness into a robot's, substructure
right.
or superstructure. He wasn't altering himself to become superhuman, as you say.
Exactly, yes. He was not going to find, he had no anticipation of finding heaven on a silicon chip.
No, he did not. And one of these days.
Yes, we will see him again.
We will see him.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Seeing what kind of stories my dad and your dad have been swapping over these last
years. Well, how are we doing time-wise?
Well, we're just about at an hour right now.
Well, so, we better go then.
Well, Brian Gadawa, we mentioned his new book. That's the interview on A View from the Bunker tonight, this coming Wednesday, interview with Josh Talley about a number of interesting things. Economics, for a start, but also the population implosion And then this coming weekend, boy, a couple of other really interesting interviews lined up. Mark Flynn talking about the Forbidden Secrets of the Labyrinth, his book.
Yay.
And Paralendra Kilns, hopefully, will also be part of that discussion. And also Mark Combs, author of End at the Beginning, about the Flood of Noah. We're going to talk about Planet X. And there's been a lot of that speculation going on. You know, there's a lot of folks that are concerned that something is coming in September. You know, look, if Planet X is coming back, and if Doug Elwell is right, you know, his book, Planet X, Sign of the End of the Age, Sign of the Son of the Man and the End of the Age.
Uh-huh.
If he's right and Planet X is coming back, then it's God's doing and it's time to rejoice.
Amen.
So until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks for listening. PID Radio is a production of the PID Radio Network, a division of Gilbert House. Please visit our website at PIDradio.com, where you'll find show notes and links to connect with us on Twitter and Facebook. We wish to thank all those who help undergird and underwrite our ministry through prayers, feedback, and donations. To contact us directly, email us at radio@peeringintodarkness.com. Opening music adapted from The Alchemist's Tower by Kevin MacLeod, www.incompetech.com. Closing music, New Day Coming by Steve Grace, stevegrace.com. Content, copyright Gilbert House, and is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derives 3.0 Unported License. For more information, see creativecommons.org.
Gonna step up to the microphone, say it loud and clear.